From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed psychotherapist, and we're here every week to deal with mental health issues from a holistic perspective. And this week, we're dealing with collective grief. And some of you may not like the title of today's show. Some of you may rejoice with the title of today's show. The title of today's show is, Some Are Saying Goodbye to Reagan, I'm Saying Good Riddance. And I'm sure that got some people's attention already, because even with the email announcement I sent out to about 600 people on my list, I got about 20 or 30 emails back from just the announcement, and that usually does not happen. So I appreciate the attention that it's getting. Now, I want to also acknowledge that in the studio with me today are two friends here for some moral support, Michelle Kaur, who has her own show in the mix here at KXAM, and Matt Prelip, who is with the Buzz Media Solutions, who helps me with my website and my archives and things like that. I want to welcome both of you, and I really appreciate the moral support of you being here today. So, I want to start out also by acknowledging my mom, who turned 81 on June 9th, a few days ago, and her consort, Tony Berardi, the 88-year-old wonderful man that she lives in sin with in Florida, and his birthday was actually the day before hers on June 8th. Now, I want to tell you a little bit about June 9th, when I called my mom to wish her a happy birthday. You know, we're talking about all the nice things you do when your parents turning whatever age they're turning, and we're having a nice conversation while I'm driving in the car on the way to a meeting. And in the middle of the conversation, she goes, isn't it a shame about Reagan? And all of a sudden, a switch blew in my brain. And for the next 20 minutes, I went on and on and on and on and on about so many things that I am not particularly happy with about Reagan and the history, and my own personal connection with that history. And my mom, God bless her, when I stopped and said, Mom, this is not what I meant to give you on your birthday, is a tirade like this. And she stopped and she said, no, Stuart, I really appreciate it. You're giving me some insight and some ideas that I've never known to even think about. And that's what today's show is about. This show is not about praising Reagan or bashing Reagan. On my way into Phoenix yesterday, when I get close enough into Phoenix, I always turn on the radio and turn on 1310 KXAM to hear what's on the station. And my experience very often is that a lot of the shows deal with health issues and minerals and herbs and things like that. And a lot of the times I turn on the radio here, and they're very conservative talk show hosts. And that was no exception yesterday, as I was driving in and heard Al Rantel taking over for Larry Elders, thank you, who I guess was maybe at Reagan's funeral. I don't know. So I'm listening and churning inside a bit more and more as I'm listening, but I'm listening. And then finally he said something where, of course, those liberals are only going to hear that Reagan was the cause of AIDS, he tripled the deficit, and he caused homelessness. And to me, I just got enraged, because I don't consider myself a liberal per se. I think I'm more moderate. But someone who's been in the trenches dealing with AIDS for 20 years, I don't believe Reagan caused AIDS. It's not the cause of AIDS. So I actually picked up the phone and got through and called him and got on the air. And I learned something by doing that. First of all, I learned not to call a conservative talk show host because they don't want to listen. They want their opinion to get out there, and I never got more than a sentence or two out without being interrupted, and it kept going back. So sometimes not saying something when it's not going to be too effective, sometimes silence is golden. But in this case, I'm really glad I called, because by the end of my little stint on that show, I was literally screaming, and we were screaming at each other until he just disconnected me. And what it brought to light was my show. And this is a show where, yes, I have my opinions on things, but as a therapist and as a human being, I like listening to other people's opinions. I like hearing what other people have to say. I consider the facts that they're giving me and the backup for it. And my mind can change. And so today's show, I'm hoping that some of you may change your mind about a few things. I hope that while I don't expect that I will ever win Al Rantel over to my way of thinking, and he's never going to win me over to his way of thinking, that some people will change some thoughts. That Reagan is neither evil, nor is he a deity. And that all of us are human beings, me included. I've made mistakes and I do some great things. But to me, the important thing of anyone's legacy, including my own, is that it's realistic and that there's a sense of honesty and integrity to it. And I believe that even President Reagan would like that his legacy have integrity and honesty about it. So in the course of today's show, for the next hour, if you feel like calling in and putting your two cents in or asking a question, the phone number in Phoenix is 480-949-1310. That's 949-1310. If you're one of my fans listening over the internet, it's the same toll number. It's 480-949-1310. So the other thing that came clear to me is that in this country, there is still a Cold War. The Cold War in this country is between liberals and conservatives. And if you're on one extreme or the other, it's not particularly a safe country to be living in. It's not particularly a safe place to be. There's a lot of anger. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of mutual attacking. And I'm always believing that attack is always about fear, and attack always causes more problems and destruction. And in a sense, we've created our own terrorism in this country because nobody's listening to each other. Everybody is just trying to be right. And in being right, nothing gets accomplished. So, like I said, I don't think I'm going to totally change anybody's minds who have certain opinions one way or the other about President Reagan. But like my mom, and if my 81-year-old mom can step back and say, I appreciate getting that information, it gives me some more things to think about in a different perspective. The same way when I hear some of the conservatives talk, I said, oh, I didn't know that, or I didn't quite look at it that way. Then I'm hoping that some of you out there listening today will consider taking that option of just letting go of needing to be right and moving into a place that is a lot more peaceful, which is open. Now, a lot of people were in mourning yesterday, and I'm no different. The difficult part of this last week is that the mourning that I've been going through is not necessarily about President Reagan. What his death brought back to me was the beginning of an AIDS epidemic that I was in the middle of in terms of support and caregiving, in terms of trying to figure out what this disease was about and how we could come together and try and prevent more infections and heal the wounded hearts of those people that were infected already and dying or have died and their loved ones. what this last week was about and what I did on Friday while President Reagan's funeral, although I did watch the funeral on TV out of respect and out of a sense of history. But my memorial yesterday had to do with my mind and my heart bringing back into consciousness the few hundred people that I buried in the 80s and 90s. The bedsides that I sat beside as people were dying, the families that I helped. My very first friend, Dennis Bittner, who died in 1986, even before I moved to L.A. I think of Tim Butler, I think of Suzanne Rodkin, I think of David Mann, I think of so many others, and their names came to me, their faces came to me, their spirits came to me. In the same way that a lot of you listening and a lot of people in this country had President Reagan come to you. It was a very difficult week, and I've been crying a lot all week remembering the losses, remembering that at a time early on when we really didn't know much about that disease, and we started learning more about how it spread. And being a gay man, of course, I was living in terror about possibly myself being infected, as my family was in terror about it. And we lived with that terror until the test came. And I had to take the test about 7 or 8 times before I could actually believe that I was HIV negative. And it was a horrific time. As horrific for those that were infected and sick with Kaposi's, with pneumocystis, in and out of the hospital, knowing that at the beginning there were no meds, how do we do some preventive work now that we know it's transmitted through body fluids? Where do we get the money? Where do we find the leadership? So I say to you, I don't blame President Reagan for AIDS. And that's what Al Rantel is claiming, that we're all blaming President Reagan for AIDS. President Reagan did not do the behaviors that transmitted the disease. President Reagan did not create the disease. But what President Reagan did was keep silent. Supposedly, the person who lives in that White House is everyone's president. Not just a select few, not just a select elite, not just those people that that president happens to agree with their ideals and cultural and religious things. But if a president is supposed to, in my opinion, be able to move above the politics, a president is supposed to be a leader. A president is supposed to put his own prejudices and bigotry aside when it comes to citizens of his own that are hurting and dying and need a sense of hope. I don't think anybody back then was expecting President Reagan to start dumping millions and millions of dollars into prevention programs and education. I didn't, because what he was doing during most of that time was cutting back all the social services and taking funds away from all of those things while building the military. So nobody was expecting a lot of money, although a lot of people were out there demanding it. Maybe a lot of people were expecting it. I take that back. But I think I was realistic enough to know it wasn't going to come from the federal government. And the fact that in this country, the people who were getting sick were the fags. There were a lot of people who didn't care about us. There were a lot of people who said, so what? The same way the fact that they knew this disease was running rampant in Africa. But Africa was not economically an area that we were depending on oil or anything else from. And it was just those black people in Africa getting sick and dying. This country and our government knew about this disease that was already ravaging an entire continent. And did nothing. So when it hit here, it was a subgroup. Except for the hemophiliacs that were dying. Except for, the intravenous drug users, they were all such subgroups that it really wasn't politically expedient to really take a stand and risk his support base, his financial support base of conservatives. So it makes sense to me he didn't do anything. But all that was needed was somebody standing up, and God bless Nancy Reagan. My understanding is she actually did speak up and ask him, and it was probably one of the few times in their marriage that obviously was so wonderful that he probably said no to her. Okay? I'm going to pause here because we have a caller. It's Jorge Sandoval. Jorge, you on?
Stuart.
Hi, Jorge. How you doing?
Doing great, thank you. It's good to hear your show.
I'm glad you're listening.
I was just intrigued by the title and just wanted to call in support. And it was actually kind of interesting on noticing the dates of how we like to find similarities in things. That actually Mr. Reagan passed away exactly, what is it, 21 years later or 23 years later after, on the same day when the first letter went out to the Centers for Disease Control announcing from Michael Gottlieb about different cases on gay men appearing.
Mm-hmm.
So how is that for an omen?
Well, an omen, and there are no accidents. I think the synchronicity of things like this, and it's interesting. I know that you're somebody who's been working a long time in the field in Los Angeles, and I'm glad you're listening from L.A., and you're somebody that would have picked up on something like that, and most of us wouldn't, and I appreciate you sharing that.
Of course.
So, thanks.
You're welcome.
Okay, thanks for
listening. Take care.
Now, the phone number is 480-949-1310. Now, I want to also acknowledge the fact that there's another disease that affects millions of people in this country and all over the world that is relevant to President Reagan. That's Alzheimer's. And conservative Republican Mr. and Mrs. Reagan were not pro stem cell research. And this is the example of when something really hits close to home, how minds can change and hearts can change. I really respect Mrs. Reagan for taking a stand and hoping that stem cell research will actually increase so that solutions to diseases that took her husband, that she lived with for 10 years, and God bless her for standing by him the way she did and being such an amazing caretaker. And I need to say to you that myself and thousands and thousands of others did that for the loved ones with AIDS. And we don't get the acknowledgement and the credit that she's been getting because she stood by her husband with Alzheimer's for 10 years. So I want to take a time and acknowledge the thousands of people that have been out there since the beginning of this epidemic, who have been by the bedsides, who have been doing the education, who have been helping, and who have not been thanked, except maybe by their loved ones. Very much like Nancy Reagan has done for her husband. So even Nancy's mind can change. Stem cell research is something she's supporting now, even though there are still many Republicans that are against it, many conservatives that are against it, and I'm sure there are others that ethically are against it. But I really appreciate the fact that, you know, she has changed her mind, and it's a shame that it took something so close to home and her own suffering to implement that. But you know what? That's how most of us implement change. We're in enough pain so we get motivated to change. We have another caller, Michael from Phoenix. Michael, you're on the air?
Yeah, Stuart, I was just curious. I didn't know how much you knew about stem cell research. I had thought that most of the advances in that had only taken place in the last 10 or 12 years. How far back does it go?
Well, I'm not a medical doctor, so I can't really answer that, but I would venture to guess you're probably close to right, that a lot of it has been taking place in the last 10 years.
Well, do you think it's fair then to criticize somebody who left office 16 years ago for not being in favor of something that wasn't even around? I mean, when you talk about, you know, the rhetoric on both sides, and I agree with that. I'm a lifelong Democrat, but I'm sick of it from both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Just everyone's wrong, everyone's evil, everyone's a liar.
Mm-hmm.
No one can have honest disagreements anymore because, you know, you just proved the point that obviously everyone should be for stem cell research. Well, that's not necessarily true any more than anyone for any given really controversial social issue. So while you say that you don't like that tone, you really become a part of it by saying that mm-hmm. and then criticizing someone for not supporting something that wasn't even around back then.
You know what? I appreciate your comment, and I agree with you. The way it came across probably did come across like that, and it wasn't my intention, but I appreciate you bringing that up. Because I agree, if it wasn't around, people couldn't take a stand. AIDS was around, and people weren't taking a stand. But I think the point that I'm making, actually more importantly, is that it takes a personal connection sometimes with the struggle, with the pain, sometimes to open one's mind to it. So I'm thinking that as people really step back and think about the pain President Reagan and Nancy went through and her reasons for changing her mind, and there's so many millions out there who have things like Alzheimer's and multiple sclerosis and so many others where stem cell research might be a help, that maybe some people who, for whatever moral and ethical reasons they have, may be able to transcend that and support it. And if they don't, I agree, that's their right not to support it. So I appreciate that, Michael. Okay. Now, either one of you guys have anything you want to add to this so far? Okay. The call number is 480-949-1310. And I want to move on to something else right now, because the issue of HIV, again, it really is about getting to more prevention, more education. And to get lost in the fact, still after 20 years, that this is a gay disease is really missing the boat. The numbers of women getting infected, the numbers of teenagers getting infected, the numbers of white and non-white in the population getting infected have been on a steady increase for these 20 years, and they're the fastest growing numbers right now. And it's not about the fact that the numbers within the gay community are beginning to increase again. That's something that the gay community was left to fend for themselves early on. The tools are there. And I can tell you for a fact, there's a lot of people at agencies like APLA and similar ones in Phoenix that are now doing brainstorming. How do we make this new again? And how do we reach out to the gay men in terms of behavior change? The tools are already there. Now, I want to talk about the Soviet Union for a bit. A lot of people give President Reagan credit single-handedly for ending the Cold War and bringing down the evil empire. On the one hand, I do give him credit. His stance militarily, his public bravado, and phrases like Gorbachev bring down that wall, very public, very well timed, very well placed, and very well meant. I give him credit for that. And he played a big part in the ending of the Soviet rule throughout Russia and the former Soviet republics. Now I'm going to speak from a place not a lot of Americans can speak from. Those of you who are listening, how many of you have actually ever been in the Soviet Union? When it was the Soviet Union, how many of you have ever been to Russia since the walls have come down? I have. In January of 1990, I started doing something. I founded a nonprofit called the International AIDS Project, and I was invited to the Soviet Union to participate in what was called the Soviet American Citizens Summit meeting, where there were 400 Americans and about 800 Soviet citizens, non-governmental people who came together to get dialogue going, because we knew if we waited for the governments to get together to sign the treaties and to have their meetings and to iron out everything, it would take a lot longer. So in January of 1990, I was privileged, and it was a humbling experience to be there. And out of that came a commitment from my end and a couple of Soviet doctors and non-medical people to start doing some prevention and training and education in the entire Soviet Union, starting in Moscow and a few other places, to try and do some true prevention work, to try and save some of their citizens from the epidemic we knew was going to come because it was beginning to spill into every country. So while their borders were tightly locked, the drug use was rather limited, although there's a lot of vodka, drinking, and being gay was totally illegal, and you could be imprisoned for being homosexual. And so it was a very closeted gay community, which meant there were a lot of gay men in the former Soviet Union that were finding men to have sex with by getting married and having kids. The same way there are a lot of men in this country that still do the same because of their fear of repercussions culturally and societally or within the religious settings they're in or whatever. But that's a small part of the of what I knew was going to be the wave of HIV infection in the former Soviet Union. It was not going to be a gay disease there. It was going to be the drug users. It was going to be Westerners coming in. It was going to be the fact that a prostitute, male or female, could make in 1 hour, being with one John, what most Soviets were making in a year or more. And so prostitution was on the rise, and this was the source of it. So, again, getting away from the fact that AIDS is a gay disease, that was the initial focus in this country because it just happened to be where it started. And so I started going to the former Soviet Union. It was an incredible experience. I remember the first time getting off the plane, it was exactly what we were told it would be. Our plane landed in Moscow, and our plane was surrounded by armed guards and guard dogs. It was the most surreal experience I could ever have described to anybody, and I'm grateful to have had the experience. And yet once we got off that plane and got through our screening and everything else, the people, many of whom had never met an American before, and I had to keep quiet about the fact that I was gay, I was told by the organizers, because it was just not something to be public about at that point. We were there for other reasons. I wasn't there to be a gay activist. I was there actually to reach my hand out to others and to see where I could help and be of most service. And that's what everybody was at this conference for. So once we got through that, I can tell you that the Soviet people, the now Russian people, Belarusian people, Ukrainians, Uzbeks, all of them, they're no longer Soviets. They all have their own cultural and regional identities. Could not have been more loving and gracious and excited about the fact that they were finally meeting some people that were from outside the Soviet Union, getting a reality check on all of the myths that they knew about what was going on in the West because they weren't told. So in many ways, again, I agree with President Reagan. It was a horrible system. It was a very dark place to be. Call it an evil empire if you wish, because there were a lot of evil things about it. But even Gorbachev said it was a matter of time, and I know a lot of people don't like hearing this, but even Gorbachev said it was a matter of time. The infrastructure of that country and its political system was collapsing. It was collapsing. Financially, they couldn't compete. Social services wise, it was breaking down. And it was a dark place to be. Gorbachev doesn't get enough credit for what the fact that it was fortuitous that Reagan and Gorbachev were in office at the same time. Reagan made the stance that he made, and I give him credit. I honestly give him credit for all that. So don't think just because someone's not a conservative that we can't acknowledge the fact that the man did some good things in the world. But Gorbachev was the visionary, and Gorbachev could see a Russia that had freedoms. In fact, it was something that once he got past his initial lifelong communist resistance to it, a lot of it happened because of him. My issue, and this is what I told my mother on the phone the other day too, my issue with Reagan about ending the Cold War was not that he doesn't deserve credit for being a major catalyst for it, but the fact that he also then had a moral responsibility to creating a safety net for a country and a group of countries that have never had a history of democracy or capitalism. They didn't know how to do it. He had a moral imperative that if you're going to do the grandstanding, then you've got to back it up with substance and say, okay, now that we got this done, It's our responsibility to show some compassion and to offer that safety net financially and aid-wise and education-wise, teach them about democracy, not just American democracy, but it had to adapt to the Russian sensibility. And let's face it, Americans are arrogant, and we're known all over the world for our arrogance, that democracy based on the American way is what it has to be. Well, we're finding out in Iraq that's not the way the democracy is going to look like there, and that's not the way democracy works in Russia. But democracy exists now, but the turmoil and the chaos that is still going on because that safety net was not offered when there was a moral imperative to offer it. That's my argument about where Reagan fell short. If you're going to be great and be magnanimous and don't gloat about winning the Cold War. Do what Abraham Lincoln actually intended to do after the Civil War, to bring North and South together, to work together and to be together, to bring North and South together so that people can get into forgiveness faster. And his assassination is the reason why there's still so much animosity between North and South. Because when President Johnson took over after Lincoln, he didn't have the same vision. He let the carpetbaggers go down and rape the South, literally, in retaliation for their secession and their arrogance, so-called arrogance. So if Reagan was going to be great, he would have had the vision that Lincoln had after the Civil War, and he didn't have it, and his aides didn't have it. And people literally, after the breakup of the Soviet Union, were starving in the streets. And I know because I was there. So don't just talk to me about theory. I was there. My Russian friends would say, Stuart, you need to go to the supermarket. Not supermarket. There was one store that sold milk and dairy products. There was another store that sold vegetables. There was another store that sold paper goods. And they would go from one to the other. And they would take me to the store that supposedly had milk in it. And there were two containers of milk standing on the shelves. And both of them were spoiled already. And this went on for years. People there were starving. They were beginning to build their anger and resentment about their own system and about Americans now. So rather than maintaining the goodwill of bringing down those walls and giving them the freedom, it ended up bringing resentment and anger. And I know I was there. It ended up opening the doors for Russian mafia to take hold of things. And the most horrible thing was, what Reagan did was open up those borders for American corporations to go in and rape that country's resources, their history, their culture, their soul, and their pride. Russia hardly owns most of Russia anymore. Their mineral rights, you walk down some of these most beautiful streets, and I remember the first time going down the Arbat, this beautiful old street from the 1600s and 1700s, and seeing the Baskin-Robbins signs and other things, these neon signs in places they didn't belong. But that the Russians were starving for anything Western. And now a lot of what was truly Russian is being torn down to build modern buildings. And who's making money from it? The Moscow mayor's wife owns the construction company that gets most of the contracts. This is the kind of corruption that was built into the system because it's all they knew how to do. They were so afraid of not having anything, they were looking for ways of getting rich as quickly as possible. So some people found, just like in this country, some people found the wealth real quickly, and others were left behind to struggle and starve. That's my bitch with how the Soviet Union breakup was handled. I give Reagan credit for being one of the catalysts for that. Now, we're going to take a short break here, and when we come back, I know my friend Michelle wants to say something, and we're going to take a very short break here, so stay tuned. This is Stuart Altschul and Tell the Truth Faster on KXAM in Phoenix. Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altschuler on KXAM, and we've been talking, the title of today's shows have been, many people are saying goodbye to Reagan, and I'm saying good riddance. And we've covered a number of areas, and my friend Michelle, I know, needs to leave the studio, and I wanted to give you, Michelle, a chance to talk about something important that's coming up this week for you.
Well, thank you so much, Stuart, and it's so nice to have you here in town. Yes, on Thursday, June 17th at 8 o'clock p.m., there is a free fashion show fundraiser. It's actually a rock and roll fashion show at Barcelona in North Scottsdale. The rock and roll is the Zoe Bowie Band, and the benefit is to train to end stroke for the American Stroke Association. So there'll be a fabulous silent auction, and we just want to invite everyone to come join us. My girlfriend is the number one fundraiser in Arizona, and after the fashion show, we'll be the number one in the nation. So thank you for the opportunity, and I love your show. It's good to have you here in town.
Thanks, Michelle. And I always have appreciated, since I've been on the air for 2 years, your support and helping to build my confidence in what I'm doing here, so thank you.
No problem. We're going to both make it together one
That's
day.
That's right. We already are. So, there was another issue I wanted to cover here, and rather than speak, I'm going to read something, and this actually was emailed to me along with a lot of other emails that I got from my announcement. And it was something published in Stockholm, Sweden, just a few days ago. It was published in Aftonbladet, if I pronounce that right, and it was written by Wolfgang Hansen. And the title of it is, "It Seems Everyone Forgot Reagan's Death Squads." And while he talks about a few other things in this, the section I want to read is, Ronald Reagan saw the world in black and white terms. To him, the struggle between freedom and communism, paradoxically, the ends justify the means. Reagan adamantly used the principle of, my enemy's worst enemy is my friend. The result became one of support for movements and regimes which committed gross violations against human rights. Hundreds of thousands paid with their lives. Reagan financed death squads in Guatemala and El Salvador. The U.S. went so far as to secretly sell arms to their arch enemy, Iran, in order to cover up support for the right-wing Contra guerrillas in Nicaragua. Reagan laid the groundwork for today's problem with Iraq. Saddam was openly supported by the USA. No protests were heard when Saddam used chemical weapons financed by the U.S. against Iranians and Kurds. And while the rest of the world tried to contribute to the abolishment of apartheid in South Africa, Reagan opposed the economic sanctions. South Africa was seen as a vital link in the struggle against communism. It didn't matter that blacks were enduring torture and practical slavery for decades. And it goes on and on and on. It's a real dichotomy. It's a real contradiction. But we talk about terror, and while Reagan may have been a catalyst for helping to free up a lot of the world, he also laid the foundation for a lot of the situations of Al-Qaeda, which a lot of the monies went to, that he supported with Iraq and helping Osama bin Laden, and to set up a lot of the situations we're dealing with the world today. And again, I go back and I say Reagan was a charming person. He had a great smile. When people talk about how wonderful he was, they talk about how folksy and how he always had a good story and a good joke, and he was great to be around and easygoing. Those are not necessarily the qualities of a great leader. They are qualities necessary for leadership. And again, I give him credit because we came out of that Watergate period very deflated and a depressed country. We came out of Vietnam and Watergate, and a lot of that was going on. And this country needed what everybody calls the optimist, the great communicator. This country needed someone who put a positive spin on things. But just being optimistic without having substance to back it up the way it needed to be doesn't always work. That's not to say he didn't have substance, and it's not to say many of his policies may have worked. But I want to step back before I close to his governorship days. And one of the other things that Al Rentel said is, of course, all the liberals are going to blame Reagan for causing homelessness in this country. I live in California, and while I wasn't in California when Reagan was governor, in cutting back social services and cutting back government, One of the things he did, again, without having a backup plan, without offering a safety net, the same way Bush is in Iraq and the same way Reagan was in the Soviet Union, in California, he cut back and cut out state hospitals without having a plan of where to put severely mentally ill people, schizophrenics, psychotics. And where did they end up? They ended up on the streets of California with the expectation that the local communities would take care of it, but it was no longer the state's problem. And again, this is an example of having a plan in mind without something to back it up. This is an example of, did Reagan cause homelessness? No, Reagan did not cause homelessness. I know you're getting a Jew trying to quote the New Testament here, but I believe even Jesus said, there will always be poor in this world. Don't worry about, you know, spending money on ointments that are going to soothe our souls and our bodies and stuff. Every penny can't go to save the poor. There will always be poor in this world. There will always be homelessness. But as a society, we are our brother's keepers. As a society, a state, a federal government, we are there to prop up the spirits of one another, not just in words, but in deeds. And throwing all those people out of state hospitals where they were taken care of and protected, and I'm not saying the care was always the best. I don't know. I wasn't there. But I did work at Creedmoor State Hospital in New York City when I was in graduate school. And it was an awesome place to get some experience while being in graduate school. It wasn't the prettiest of places. It was built in the late 1800s, so except for the newer buildings. It was a dark snake pit in some places, but they were caring people working there, mixed with the burnout ones that had been there most of their lifetimes. The system is never perfect, but we are our brother's keeper, and we need to do things socially with the intention of watching out for one another. And that includes, in my opinion, our government. That doesn't mean it has to be overblown, but it does mean it has a sense of integrity and caring and concern. And that, to me, is something that was lacking in some of the policies that President Reagan took. So, there are a number of other things that, if I had the time, I'd get into. This is just 1 hour of what I believe is point-counterpoint, and I guess this is the counterpoint, to the many hours of quote-unquote conservative talk shows that have just been deifying President Reagan. I'm trying, within my own heart, to find a place where I can honor the man and still not agree with everything he did. I'm trying in my own heart to find a place where I can forgive him for the pain and suffering that went on because of inaction. Not malicious action, but inaction. And there's a difference. I don't think President Reagan was a malicious man. I believe he believed the things he was doing was right. And I believe it's important to live in integrity. But I also believe that when your own wife comes to you and says, we need to do something about AIDS, and she's been your guide and your consort and your advisor for so long, why pick this issue? So with all of this being said, and with all respect to Al Rantel and all the others that spend their show cutting off people who are not necessarily agreeing with them, I challenge you guys and women to listen to your callers. And just because you see it going in a direction that doesn't fit your party line, your emotional party line, that there's still a place to air it. Just like my caller today, Michael, called me on something. Was I going to get defensive? No. You know? I appreciated the fact that he called in and did that. I appreciated it greatly. And for the rest of my life, I appreciate feedback. We live in a country that talks about freedom of speech. They have as much right to be on the radio as I do. They have as much right to say what they have to say as I do. But I no more have the right to preach hate and division than they do. And I think everybody listening needs to judge for themselves what works and what doesn't. And this hate in this country, the rhetoric that tears us apart and doesn't get things done, is that really what we're needing right now or ever? So this is a show about mental health. And that's exactly what I've been talking about today. It gets down to our own personal feelings about things, how current events, and I've done shows. If you go to my archives on tellthetruthfaster.com, you can listen to the couple of shows I've done on how current events affect us emotionally and personally and psychologically, how current events in the world create depression, communal depression, and lots of other things. These current events that have been going on as long as any of us have been born, we're at the effect of current events. This has to do with mental health, emotional health, and spiritual health and well-being. We're going to close today with, if you've listened to this show before, you know that my theme song is Eva Cassidy's version of Over the Rainbow. And today's the first day I'm actually going to play it in its entirety. And if you want it again, it's on my website, tellthetruthfaster.com. If you want to email me or get in touch with me and make any comments, I welcome them. Go to that site and email me. But I think Eva Cassidy's version of Over the Rainbow is one of the most inspiring and chilling and beautiful renditions I've heard of almost any song, never mind Over the Rainbow. I send that out in memory of Ronald Reagan, his time in Hollywood, his time in government, and his time at peace now, and to his family. I send this song out in memory of everyone suffering from Alzheimer's and everyone who has lost someone to HIV and AIDS and everyone still struggling with it within them everywhere in the world. And I ask that we move into a place of compassion and stop calling this a gay thing and start having compassion even for the gay and lesbian, bisexual and transgender people who are struggling with this disease also. I honor all of you. You're all heroes to me. Thank you for listening, and thanks for your support. This is Stuart Altshuler, and Tell the Truth Faster. Enjoy Eva Cassidy.
That I heard of love.